Okay, I'd like to bring up from Schwabe Williams and Wyatt, our moderator today, Phil Habether. If we can give him a round of applause, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. It's not often people give me a round of applause, so I'll take it where I can get it. I first want to start by introducing the electeds that we have here in the room, and I'm going to introduce the panel. I'm going to give you a bio on each one of them so I can save them from doing that. I went on their website, so if the information's inaccurate, blame me for that. I'm first going to start with Senator Joe Zirelli. He's in the 18th District. He's got a name tag, so he doesn't have to wave to you. Senator Don Benton in the 17th District. Representative Paul Harris, also of the 17th. And we have Tim Probst in the 17th as well. Representative Ed Orca is from the 18th District, and that's going to be changing to the, you'll be moving to the 20th. We have Representative Ann Rivers in the 18th. Representative Jim Moeller, the 49th District. Representative Sharon Wiley was supposed to join us. She has a fairly good excuse. I think you'll agree with me on this. She's at the hospital where she's expecting her first grandchild. So that's supposed to be happening today. So we're going to give her a pass on that, and I'll answer the questions for her, since I know what the questions are. We have County Commissioner Mark Bolt. If you'd give a wave. County Commissioner Tom Mielke. We have Bill Turley of the Vancouver City Council. And I don't want to mispronounce this one. Larry Smith of the Vancouver City Council. I was practicing that. And Jeannie Stewart of the Vancouver City Council. And did I miss any of the electeds? I think I got everybody. Okay. Also have some candidates with us today. First off, I think you all know Liz Pike. She's running for state rep of the 18th District. We have Julie Olson, also a candidate for the 18th District. Did you know you're running in the 18th?
She'd like to.
Whoever changes, she's running in the 17th. Thank you for it. David Gregerson, he's candidate for Clark County Superior Court Judge. Jim West, candidate for Clark Public Utilities Commissioner. Dale Smith, candidate for State Representative. That's 18th, right? Thank you, 18th. And Joe Tanner, candidate for Clark County Commissioner. Probably would have been quicker if I introduced those not running for offices today. So thank you for everybody for being here. And did I miss any candidates by any chance? I did, sorry. David Bedore also running for Clark County Commissioner. Steve Hogan?
Canva City Council.
Canva City Council. All right. And I think we've got everybody. All right, I'm going to introduce the panel so they don't have to do it later, and then I'm going to ask them a couple questions. They were provided these questions in advance. Just so you know, it's not a debate. We want some feedback from them, so we wanted to not surprise them. First, I'm going to start with Representative Tim Probst, just because he's on my left. Tim was first elected to the House in 2010. He's on the following committees. He's vice chair of the Education Appropriations and Oversight Committee. He's on education, higher education, and rules. Sitting next to Tim Probst is Representative Paul Harris, also in the 17th. He was elected to the House in 2010, and he's on the following committees. He's the assistant ranking member on the Environment Committee, Health and Human Services Appropriations and Oversight Committee, the Healthcare and Wellness Committee, and Technology, Energy, and Communications. He's also the owner of Quick Meds LLC, and he works for Quick Collect. Sitting next to Paul is Senator Don Benton of the 17th. He was elected to the House of Representatives in 1994, and then elected to the Senate in 1996, where he's served since. His standing committees now are Ranking Republican Member, the Financial Institutions, Housing and Insurance, Government Operations, Tribal Relations, and Elections. He's a founder and CEO of the Benton Group, which conducts sales, marketing, and training consulting for television. We next have Representative Ann Rivers. Ann was elected to the House in 2010, and she serves as Assistant Whip for the House Republican Caucus. Her committee assignments are the Business and Financial Services, Transportation, Judiciary, and Rules. She is also the president of a governmental and public affairs consulting firm. And sitting next to Ann is Representative Ed Orcutt, the 18th, now 20th. He was elected to the House in 2010, and his legislative assignments are the Economic and Revenue Forecast Council, the Western Legislative Forestry Task Force, the Budgets and Revenue Committee, the National Conference of State Legislators, the Environment Committee, and the Advisory Committee, also the National Conference of State Legislators, and the Washington Advisory Group on Streamlined Sales Tax. Next.
I've been in the legislature since 2002.
2002, I'm sorry, what did I say? 2010, all right, so he's been no longer. Sorry, Ed. I have Joe Zarelli, who's Senator of the 18th. He was first elected to the Senate in 1995. Have that correct? All right. And his standing committees are, he's a Rankin Republican member of the Ways and Means Committee. He's a member of the Rules and Economic Development, Trade, and Innovation Committees. And we have Jim Moeller. Jim is of the 49th. He's serving his fifth term in the House, having been elected in 2002. His committees, he's currently Speaker Pro Tem. He's on the Healthcare and Wellness Committee, Labor and Workforce Development, Rules, Transportation, Senate House Joint Task Force on Revising the Child Support Schedule, Joint Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs, and the Governor's Work Group on Licensing the Mental Health and Abuse Counselors. And then Sharon Wiley, who could not join us today, she was elected to, she joined the House in 2011, and she's on the Capital Budget, Environment, Higher Education, Technology, Energy and Communications Committee. So with that introduction, I'm now gonna turn the microphone over to the electeds and like for them to take a couple of minutes, 2 to 3 minutes, and tell us what do you feel you accomplished this session, whether it's related to the building industry or not, and what would be your number one priority in 2013? I'm just gonna start on the left here with Representative Prost, and you can pass the microphone down when you're finished.
Thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity to be here today. You are the ones who are building our economy very literally, and what we need is strong business growth and creation of good jobs, secure jobs, in the long run. I hope we are seeing some light at the end of this long tunnel. It has been the worst recession since the 1930s, and coming through that has been a challenge, certainly for individuals and for businesses, also at the state level. We've been able to balance the budget. So number one, we have a balanced budget. Number two, we added additional constraints to future spending. So we are also trying to ease the volatility that we have in Washington, where when you have boom years, a lot of spending happens, and when you have bust years, the cuts are even bigger because of that. So that rainy day fund and strengthening the rainy day fund is important. The four-year balanced budget amendment was incredibly important for the bill. And also some of the work we did on the debt limit for capital spending. Those are all going to help us 10 years from now and 15 years from now, as well as helping us right now by having a balanced budget, which is required in the state of Washington. On my own personal side, I worked very seriously on scholarships for middle-class students. The middle class is getting squeezed. Tuition is going up at incredibly high rates. The middle class can't afford it, and they don't qualify for financial assistance. And so we were able to work together with a private-public partnership to create scholarships for middle class students. And that was funded initially at a 10-to-1 ratio, private sector to public sector money. So we got $10 private sector money for every dollar the government put in. And 3,000 kids are going to get scholarships to help them pay for those for tuition. The other one is protecting levy equalization for our schools. That prevents school funding from shifting up north to the Puget Sound area. And it's tens and tens of millions of dollars that our schools would lose. And it doesn't save anybody any money. It shifts up north, and the property richer districts up there get it. So protecting levy equalization is very important to me as well. And at the end of the day, we didn't cut education or higher education, which are the seeds of our future economy. So I was glad about that as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Harris. I'm kind of new at this still. I'm still trying to understand everything that goes on in Olympia, which maybe it's good I don't completely understand it. What happened up there this session was interesting. We did balance the budget, but that's a requirement. And I appreciate the work of Senator Benton and Senator Girardi on that budget. I think there was a lot of bipartisan work done on that, and that budget came down. And we were able to balance the budget without increasing revenues on the people of the state of Washington, which I think is very, very important. At the beginning of the session, it looked like we were going to have a sales tax increase and several other issues that I was vehemently opposed to. And I was glad that we were able to balance the budget without increasing revenues to the people of the state of Washington. I sat on a couple interesting committees, and one is the Healthcare Committee. And a Healthcare Exchange Act was passed this last session. I voted no on that. It's interesting to be on a committee that you know you're headed in a direction that you're not philosophically in favor of, and that but yet you're still involved in it, and your name's somewhat attached to that. It's an interesting paradigm. The health exchange in and of itself, I think, can actually do some good. I hope so. I hope we still continue to have our choice. The concern I have with the exchange was that we gave too much power to a board that we're going to create. And I feel ultimately that if we're going to get involved in healthcare and we're going to start writing rules and regulations, that it needs to be upon the elected official and not upon an appointed board. And I ultimately, as your state legislator, need to be held responsible for that. And as an elected official, if I make a mistake, you need to get rid of me on that. And I really believe that we need accountability, especially in the healthcare forum. And I'm very concerned that the reason I voted no is we gave the authority to a board, which I'm not in favor of. I think the most important thing, though, that I look forward to in the next session is that of creating an atmosphere where we can have jobs. And everybody talks about jobs, but I want to talk specifically about one area that I'm concerned about. And that concern is the cost of power and I-937. I really believe, as I sat down with our high-tech group this year on several occasions, they were very strong in that the next step of I-937, which is 9% more of power that is going to come through green power, which is going to be extremely expensive, is going to impact all of us. It's going to impact us tremendously. SEH America sat in the office and basically said if we could give them certainty of power, they would add 1,000 new jobs in the area. But they also said if we see drastic fluctuations in power, that it's going to be really difficult to keep them competitive in the world in a particular business. You know, and this last increase to SEH America and to several high tech meant $300,000 in increases in power costs to the bottom line. This next step is twice that. So start thinking about that. Think about the impact that power has on our region and how many of these businesses have come here because we have competitive burdens on power. We need to address hydro as a percentage of hydro is renewable, and that will really help us tremendously and will get us out of this predicament we're in. And we need to, and I think that to me is the most important thing that I can do this next session, is to get a bill passed that recognizes hydro as a percentage of a renewable resource.
Thank you, Senator Benton.
Great, thank you very much. Well, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to come and listen to us here today. This is, I've been coming to these BIA luncheons for 18 years now. And as most of you know, some of you I haven't seen in a long time, I see some of my old friends out there, we've had a tough battle for the last 18 years trying to make housing more affordable and make it easier for builders to comply with the law and get their jobs done and create jobs. And I saw a chart 2 years ago as we said headed into this economy that showed where the jobs had been lost. And number one on the chart, of course, was the building industry. It had been almost a 30% hit. And you looked all the way down the list, and the last one on the list, of course, was government, which hadn't suffered any loss in jobs at that time. And so government was still going strong 2 years ago in the midst of all of this. It finally caught up with us in the fact that we couldn't sustain the budget because we'd been spending too much every year. And we always spend more. Why? Because we only have to balance the budget for 2 years. We don't have to take into account those outlying years, the third, the fourth, the fifth year, where that bow wave for those new programs grow and grow and grow. And nobody really wanted to talk about that. This session, we did talk about that. I had several bills this session that I introduced. One was a constitutional amendment to implement the provisions of Initiative 601.
Many of you may remember the Initiative 601 initiative, which limited the growth of government to a formula that included population growth and inflation and allowed government to grow at a sustainable rate based on that. Unfortunately, it's just a statute. And so over the years, the legislature slowly, methodically dismantled every piece of 601, including the two-thirds requirement to pass additional taxes. And so I introduced Pastor's Amendment this year. I said, look, 601 worked well. If you look at where we are in spending now and where we would be in spending if 601 was still being followed, there's a huge gap. It wouldn't have stopped the crisis, but it would have made the crisis much more manageable. And so let's put it in the Constitution where legislators who have a penchant to say yes and have a difficult time saying no to their constituencies can't change it, so that we can have sustainable growth in the future and we don't have to pull the rug out from underneath constituencies that have programs that have built up around them, which is what we've discovered that we've had to do in the last year and a half, and probably will have to address again next year as well. Unfortunately, that concept was unacceptable to the majority Democrats that controlled the legislature and the governor's mansion. But they don't want anything in the Constitution that would limit their ability to say yes to their constituencies. And so we go down the road. Nothing happened on the budget. Joe had very few, if any, negotiations for the first 4 or 5 weeks because the chairman of Ways and Means was busy on another subject. The fact of the matter is, we got to March 2nd and we still hadn't passed the budget, and the session was supposed to end on March 9th. Joe said, I've been working to build a coalition. And he was able to get some Democrats to go along with the Republicans. They came to me and asked me to make the historic motion, the first time in 25 years on the floor of the Senate, to actually take control of the Senate from the minority and pass a budget to get the ball rolling. We had 7 days left at that point to actually pass a budget, and we did. We had 3 Democrat votes. We went through the procedural motions allowed under the rules of the Senate. We took control of the Senate, and we passed a sustainable budget without significant cuts to the most vulnerable in our community, the DD community, the education community. In comparison, the House passed a budget that moved levy money out into 2013 and really would have hurt education. So I was quite happy to be part of the group that moved a budget forward and allowed the log jam to free up and get some negotiations going. And in the end, we were successful in the second session of passing a budget, essentially Joe's budget, the Republican Senate budget, that protected education, zero cuts to education, and allowed for no general tax increases on the general public. We're very proud of that. We also got 2 very important long-term reforms, a 4-year balanced budget. Unfortunately, again, we wanted that in the Constitution, so the legislature can't change it with a simple majority vote, but the House Democrats and the Senate Democrats would not allow us to have a constitutional amendment. They wanted it in statute. My only assumption there is that they're going to change that in the future.
And Senator, I'm going to have to cut you off to make sure we have enough time for everybody.
Sure.
We will come back to the top priorities. Thank you.
Paul talked too long. See? I got shorted because Paul talked too
long. All right. Thank you, Senator. Now we have Representative Ann Rivers.
Remedy is the soul of wit, so I will try to be very witty today. One of the things that I'm most proud about that I worked on this session is the protections that I was able to work for with the Columbia River Crossing. I was able to get a commitment of no tolls on 205, a tolling and revenue study that includes looking at no tolls for 2 or more people in the car or for those folks who have to cross the bridge every day to get to work. The reality is that I've said from the outset I have grave concern about the discretionary dollars that would be taken from our community and taken from those folks who are also already living on a shoestring, and we have to look for protections for them. So we were able to get that done. Additionally, worked with Representative Mueller on the construction of a legislative oversight and audit committee, which includes a citizen participant. I think it's really important to make sure that people feel like they're getting an objective opinion from someone who's a citizen, looking for somebody who crosses that bridge, who's actually a bridge user. And we're in the process of submitting resumes for that right now so that we can get that committee going in the near future. And perhaps most importantly, a cap on the project. We can see examples of mega projects across the United States that start off being $3 billion projects and end up being $8 or $10 billion. And we need to make sure that we're sending the strong message, you know, Cadillacs are great, but Honda Accords will get you there just as well. So those are the things. I'm on the Transportation Committee.
Better reliable.
Yeah. I'm on the Transportation Committee, so much of my time in Olympia has been spent on transportation issues. I really enjoy it. And I guess for application here, transportation, if you think about what we need in order to create good, solid communities, if we have the greatest homes in the world, if we have the greatest buildings in the world, they mean nothing if we can't get to them or get to them on streets that are full of potholes and so forth. So I never thought I'd say that I was really passionate about transportation, but here I am. I've become very passionate about transportation. My goals for next year, I introduced legislation this session that didn't get anywhere because I think that there were much more higher profile issues that we dealt with, specifically auditing the audits conducted by the state auditor to be included in our budgeting process. I know that it's part and parcel of the folks writing our budget. Some of them use the audit, some of them don't, but I really think that that should be a standard course of action, so I'm going to be working on that. And then you may have seen some media in the newspaper recently about a sex offender issue at Prairie High School. So I'll be taking up that issue on the House side and working in concert with folks in the Senate to make sure that we have a full discussion about some things that just need to happen to keep our kids safe at school. And finally, this is my magic wand issue. If I had a magic wand, this is the thing that I'd do right away. We have got to get DOE under control. We have got to stop all this ruling. So, thank you. So I think that we're at a crossroads in Washington State where we may see a huge sea change in our elected leadership that may position us to be able to do some things about that. So I thought long and hard about how I'd answer this question about what do I want to do. I know what I want to do, and I'm hoping that you all help us create the climate that helps me to be able to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to follow up on Ann's last point about rulemaking. In August of 2010, I sent a letter to Governor Gregoire requesting a rulemaking moratorium as an important way to enable employers to get some regulatory certainty and to be able to start creating jobs and bringing people back to work. It took her 3 months to do a rules moratorium. She put it on for a year, and she left it so loose there was a loophole big enough to drive the entire Department of Ecology through. And lo and behold, they're driving through it at full speed. We did a little bit of research prior to asking for that moratorium and found that there are 43 full-time equivalent employees in the Department of Ecology dedicated to rule writing, another 5 dedicated to policy and guidance. That totals up to 48 people in the Department of Ecology whose primary function is to make it harder for you to bring people back to work. And that's wrong. That needs to change, and it needs to change now. So in 2011, I introduced House Bill 1156, and that was designed to put a stronger and a longer moratorium on rulemaking and to start getting rid of some of the rulemakers that are in Olympia. 43, 48 is way too many, especially in a single department, and especially in the Department of Ecology. We need to bring the rule writing back into the legislative arena so that it requires a vote of those of us who are elected by the citizens rather than by a bunch of bureaucrats who never have to face the electorate, who can sit there and listen to all of your concerns and absolutely ignore them and pass the rule the way they proposed it. That's absolutely wrong and absolutely has to change. The other bill that I introduced, and I actually introduced it in the 2010 session as 3090, and then reintroduced it as 1162 in the 2011 session, is to get rid of the duplication and triplication of effort in natural resource agency management, and hope that others will do the same in other agencies. But we've got, in a lot of cases, 3, 4, 5 different agencies doing the same functions. And when I put a forest practice permit in for a private landowner, and I have to go out and meet with Department of Natural Resources, Department of Ecology, and Department of Fish and Wildlife, and have those three sets of boots in the creek, it reminds me of what Greg Warr said. We don't need three sets of boots in the creek. So let's get those other two sets of boots out of the creek. We started making a little bit of progress with 6406, but it doesn't go far enough. There's a lot more work we need to do. But giving you regulatory certainty so you can start to hire people back is what it's going to take in order for us to get this economy moving again, get you moving again, and help not only the citizens out there who are looking for work, but help all of our government agencies, our schools, our fire districts, our county, our cities, and the state government have more revenue. Because you're the ones that generate the revenue. You're the ones who provide the jobs and generate the revenue. And we have to remember that, and it has to be first and foremost in our minds when we make any decision in Olympia. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I forgot what the questions were, but I'll do my best with this talk because you all enjoy hearing us talk, right?
Would you like me to repeat them for you, Senator? Okay, all right.
You know, my job has been for a number of years now, really since 2003, is to manage from our caucus's perspective how we spend your money. And from a policy perspective, just about anything that costs money finds its way through the Ways and Means Committee. So for me, while I try not to be the expert on a lot of things, I have to be close to an expert on a lot of things. So my goal has been for the last several years, and specifically in the last 2 years, where I think we've got significant gains. I think this state and our legislature has been able to take advantage of what has been otherwise a very difficult economic time for the taxpayer, for the citizens of the state of Washington. So all is not lost in that respect, I think. Over the last couple of years, we've managed to do, first of all, balance things within the projected revenue. Now that has been a moving target, I'll give you that. But for years, we have always spent more money than we have projected even coming in, because Olympia always expects that the next year we'll just see more growth in revenue. It's typical in a growing economy that you're gonna see growth in your business. And in this model of government, that's how we've always budgeted. But what we've been able to do in the last couple of years is not only downsize government in a lot of ways, reduce overall spending, but also track our expenditures with what our projected revenue is, and when that has changed, come back and made those adjustments in our spending as well. I think that's a positive trait that we've established, and I'm hopeful that more people will understand that that's a value moving forward that we ought to hold true in the legislature, regardless of when and if our economy starts to grow again. I think that's a big win. The other thing that we seldom, if ever, look at is, because of constituency needs, we're always living for today in government. We're always thinking about how we're going to help X, Y, and Z today within the confines of the budget. And what I've tried to do over the last several years is get us to look down the road to what others are going to have to deal with, not those of us particularly here today, but the legislators coming behind us. And that has to do with debt and liability that is hanging out there that eventually somebody's going to have to pick up and pay. And a big piece of that has been our pension liabilities. We've heard a lot of talk about liabilities and pensions around the country during this economic collapse. Well, what we've been able to do in the last 2 years is eliminate more than $10 billion worth of unfunded liability in our pension system for the next 25 years. I think that's significantly a great win for the taxpayers. You see, we all tend to focus on what we're spending today without regard to how it's going to affect us in the future and how our policy decisions that we choose today are going to affect us in the future. So from that perspective, and including this year, we've significantly reduced on a permanent basis the long-term liability in that pension system. I think at this point, with the changes we made this last session, special session, we will be ranked the number one pension system in the country from a liability or a funded status in the country. I think that's a great win for the taxpayers of the state.
The other thing we did, and Senator Bent talked about a little bit, is this four-year balanced budget. We are the first state in the union that will have a requirement to balance our budget over 4 years. I'll tell you why that's significant and important. Because, again, we only spend money or we make decisions based on how it's going to affect the current biennium, that two-year period. And so when you enact a new program in the 18th month, let's say, of a two-year biennium, you don't understand the full cost of that unless you look out 2 years into the next biennium when that's fully implemented. The significance of that four-year requirement would be now when we pass a budget, we'll be required to make sure that that thing balances through the next biennium so that we know that our revenue and our spending are working in concert or together. And we allow for some exemptions during difficult times, such as what we've been in now. So I think these are great wins, and there's many others to talk about. But I think ultimately, that's the same thing I'll continue to do next year if I'm blessed enough to be in the legislature again next year. And with that, I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. I think the what I'm most proud about over this last session has to be the Jobs Act. What I've heard repeatedly from all my constituents, and specifically also in regards to this particular organization, is putting people back to work. And government has a job to play in that. It's not singularly upon government to create jobs, but with the private sector, it can work together to create an environment that is conducive to job creation. So $1 billion in bonded money to put people to work right now with shovel-ready projects right here, hundreds of projects around the state of Washington, 20,000 people employed, 9,000 people spin off employment from that. That's the best kind of social program you can imagine. When you put a roof over somebody's head, when you put food on the table, when you put clothes on the back of the kids going to school, that's real social work. That's what I'm most proud of. As far as, and that's going to happen. It just was signed by the Governor Gregoire, I think last week. It's going to go into effect this July. There are 30-some projects around Clark County that I'm aware of. And even more around this state. As far as what I plan on working on next year, we have to continue to work on this issue. I don't think anybody has not noticed that this recession has lingered long and hard, and particularly in response to getting people back to work. I think that has to be our number one priority. That has to be our number one goal, is putting people to work, not only here in Clark County, but around the state. Look forward to your questions.
Thank you.
So I do have some questions for the panel, but in the interest of time, I know that you probably have questions out there, and I think the panel would rather hear from you than from me. Am I correct on that? Getting a lot of nods. So we're going to go ahead and open it up for questions. Does anybody out there have a question for the panel? Yes.
Anyway, he had a blog that he wrote. He said about the budget, yet the end result a month later was a spending plan by you guys, negotiated between the Senate coalition and the Democrats who remained in control of the House, passed by one of the strongest bipartisan budget votes ever witnessed in the Senate, not to mention a few reform measures that may reduce the skyward trajectory of state spending and reduce pressure for big tax increases in the future. That is gigantic. And I want to thank each one of you for doing that. Thank you for your part in presenting a budget that is rational and it's an adult budget, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you for that comment. Are there, yes? Can you speak loudly for us?
My question, the Department of Ecology was delegated, the U.S. EPA delegated responsibility to the Department of Ecology to run their water and probably the air program too. Water is one affects us on the city council. The state of Washington had to work to get to the point where we could get that delegation. In order to qualify, we had to be able to prove that we have standards that exceed the EPA's normal standards and go through a series of tests to delegate that responsibility to our stands. And now we run it through the Department of Ecology. Now we considered backing away from that and trying to reverse the role of Department of Ecology and revert it back to the EPA. So when we look at the standards for monitoring groundwater and various other things, we're on a more equal footing with the other states. There's 20 some states that are regulated by the EPA and their standards aren't nearly as restrictive as ours. So have we considered turning that back over and getting the Department of Ecology out of there? My question.
All right, can you limit your response to 2 minutes?
I can.
All right, thank you.
So I don't know that we necessarily need to return it back to the US EPA, but what we need to do is rein in the Department of Ecology so they're not going way far above and beyond what's required by the federal government. You've basically got a rogue agency that needs to be reined in, plain and simple.
Is that short enough?
That was perfect, thank you. Anybody else? Yes,
Representative Harris. I sit on the Environment Committee, and I've got to tell you, it's just not as simple as, and I appreciate my representative working because he's been up there a little longer than I have. But watching how committees work, I want, looking at a lot of your questions, I want you to understand that bills and reform does not happen with the way we're situated right now. Bills do not come out of committee unless the majority party agrees with that bill. You can have the greatest idea in the world, and if that committee does not agree with you, if you can't get out of that committee right now that I sit on the system minority ranking on an environment, which I'll tell you I hate because everything, I hear all the clapping here, that you must think I'm some sort of rogue agent for them, and I'm not. That committee is stacked, okay? That committee is stacked. They're all stacked. Because they're stacked because the Democrats control. So I sit on that committee with 8 Republicans and 12 Democrats. So you gotta understand, to get something on the committee, there's some great ideas here. And I would love to rein in ecology. In fact, I voted to rein in it every time I could. It's just not that simple because the bills that we need to get through to rein in ecology won't get out of committee.
Thank you. Anybody else for that question? All right.
I just wonder how many bills get worked and how many, you know, what's the volume of stuff that people are trying to get passed and pushed through, I guess, or even they even make the floor. So I don't know what the sheer volume is. But.
Somebody? All right, I'm going to start with Jim and we'll come back to Senator Ben.
I can speak as someone who manages the debate in the House. I could probably see about 300 bills come across the House floor. There's probably close to 1,500 bills that are introduced in a short session. In a long session, it can be double that.
Experts at everything, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. Turn over to Senator Bentley.
On average, and I can't take from last year because I've looked at all the panel numbers, but on average, approximately 2,000 bills, give or take, are introduced each regular session. That's probably the long session. The short session is less than that. But on average, that's a lot of new laws. And really what we ought to do is have one session that's devoted totally to repealing laws. How would that be? Wouldn't that be great? Where we just focus on reducing, because every time you pass a law, no matter what it does, whether you think it's good or whether you think it's bad, and I think it's bad, and you think it's good, it doesn't matter. Every time a new law is signed by the governor, there's this whole rulemaking process that goes through. So there's a whole bunch of new rules that have the force of law that are created by people that aren't elected, okay? And it costs money, no matter what it is. Every time there's a new law on the book, it's another regulation for something. If you've seen John Stossel's report here a couple of weeks ago about how every American citizen breaks the law at least 2 or 3 times a day, every day, and you don't even know it because there's so many laws, right, that are out there. We just got to be able to reduce it. And, you know, we've talked about this in the legislature. Do you put a rule in, a restriction on legislators? You can only introduce 3 bills, you know. And, of course, that hasn't happened. And we agreed to that. Senator Jacobson holds the record. I think he introduced 100 bills in one session before he retired. And so everybody has an idea of how to fix something. But Representative Harris is right. The ideas that get through typically are those that are approved by the majority party that's in control. And that's really the bottom line. So if you want to change the kind of laws that are being passed, you have to change the majority. And if you want to reduce the number of bills that are being passed, you need to change the majority. And that's really the bottom line.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Rivers.
But don't forget, in order to get rid of a law, you have to pass a bill. Just saying.
That's a good point. All right. Well, I know we have time for one more question.
Representative Harris, you mentioned about power. Is your sense that that is an issue that's just divided by party, or is that, does everybody seem to recognize what the issues are around the restrictions on that?
Real quick.
I don't think that's a strictly part of my eye. I really don't. Okay, I don't believe that. I think it's a difficult issue. We've kind of aligned ourselves, and I don't think it purposely, with wind. And wind, the wind people have made significant investments in the state of Washington. You need to realize that. But on the same token, we need to realize the cost of that power. And the unintended cost is actually right now is that we don't need the power. So it's kind of the double whammy we're in right now. We are long on power. We have enough power for the next 10 years without doing anything, let alone bringing on more green power. So at a significant price increase, folks, at a significant price increase. So it's a difficult issue, but I think it needs to be addressed, and we need to address hydro. We need to address hydro's renewable.
Thank you. I really agree with that. This is an issue that we can solve by having Democrats and Republicans work together. Now, the fact is, you do have people at both extremes who just want to lob bombs at each other, and that does not fix a thing, and it won't fix a thing no matter who's in charge. You need people working together. Now, when you get Republicans and Democrats working together to solve a problem, it happens. That scholarships bill for the middle class that I passed, massively, massively bipartisan, and notably, Democrats voting against it too, Republicans voting against it too, a few on each side, and the huge middle voting for it. Same thing with the Career Pathways Act this year. That was a different bill that I passed through the House. It got killed in the Senate, but it passed with a massive majority because it was worked in the middle with Republicans and Democrats working together. You know, partisanship will not fix the economy. We need jobs. We need jobs now, and it involves everybody in this society working together to make it happen. We need realism and teamwork and a positive attitude to fix the issues that face not only our state but our nation, because our nation's leadership in the world is what's at stake here over the long run. Thank you.
I couldn't agree, and when we found solutions like the budget solution this year, it was a bipartisan coalition. 3 Democrats joined the Republican coalition, and that's what allowed us to get out in time. And so you work across the aisles. And several years ago, people were amazed that Senator Cole Wells, who's one of the most liberal senators from downtown Seattle, and Senator Don Benton, a conservative senator from Vancouver, worked together and passed a series of bills to protect our kids in school from coaches and teachers who pray. Remember the Seattle Times article that came out about that. This year, I introduced a piece of legislation in the Senate that had 35 co-sponsors. And if you know the makeup of the Senate, there's only 49 members. That means there are about half and half on that bill. It passed the Senate, it passed the House, and the governor signed it into law last week. And that protects, again, our kids from unfair treatment in their schools. And so when the issue is serious and big, and we can get our heads around a bipartisan solution to it, that happens now. But there are philosophies, political philosophies, that do carry through, and some people unfortunately put their party before their country or their party before their state. You know, I try to always put my constituents in the 17th district in front of my party, and I try to put my state in front of my party. But I belong to the Republican Party because I believe in the basic tenets and principles that they espouse. And that means I'm going to vote for a Republican leader when the Republicans are in the majority. And then the Republican leader can help move Republican ideals forward. And that was one of the problems we had this year in the budget, is even though we had a bipartisan vote in the Senate, Senate leadership and House leadership for the first 3 weeks of special session refused to even meet with Joe on his budget. And that wasn't very bipartisan. So as bipartisan as you can make things, sometimes the leadership of the parties made it much more difficult, unfortunately.
Thank you. I want to thank the panel for being here today to give you their recap of the session and their priorities for next year. So if we could give them one more round of applause. There's no doubt that our entire Southwest Washington delegation is a hardworking group. I think that they will be around here a little bit longer today if you have some questions you'd like to ask them. And I think you can also get a hold of them through their website. It's pretty easy to find. So with that, thank you. And I'm going to turn it over to AJ.
That's the hot seat, I think, right there, is trying to put this together and keep these on in line somewhat along the way. I want to thank our sponsors again here that were here today. Schwabe, of course, Robert Williams and Wyatt, Gaither Homes, G2, Coop.com is our media sponsor, High Landscaping, and of course, Pinnacle Mortgage. I want to thank my political affairs director who puts all these types of things together for us. Liz Pike, she has a great job for this and all our other events. And our Southwest Washington delegation here, they do a great job for us. Clark County delegation, I appreciate their hard work and on our behalf. I also want to thank our staff from the BIA, Abely, Garrett, and Zach that are here today. Thank you very much for your help in everything we do here. Gina Johnson's our vice chair of the Political Action Committee. I wanted to thank her too for her help. And I want to thank you all for attending. To tell you quickly about the big, and there's a little bit of propaganda over there. We interview, endorse, and support pro-industry. I like to go to pro-jobs and pro-business candidates. That's our purpose. So every year seems like it's an election year. You know, there's ask these. I know. I'm sure they know. Every year there's more going on, and even in the off years, we're still electing city council and other positions too. So. The RPAC interviews virtually all local candidates for these various positions. Our group is part of the BIAW. I hope everybody, all these panelists know our lobbyists up there. They're fighting for our industry and for jobs and for business up there every day. And I should mention too, our next event that you'll see here, there's a flyer on your tables, is on June 14th, we're going to have our annual auction, our PAC auction, and let's see, that is sponsored by Northwest Custom Electric, Gaither Homes, Echo, and the BIA itself. It's going to be at the Heathman on June 14th. That is Flag Day, and we're going to give all candidates for elective office a chance to speak at that event as we start the evening off, and that's always a good time. We appreciate your help with that. And thank everybody for being here, and look forward to seeing you. Thank you.